Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the October 3rd, 2016, Othello City Council Workshop. If you'd all please rise for a short invocation. If you'd all please silently say a prayer and ask for the wisdom and blessing upon this council and upon this city. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You may be seated. Item 1.04 is roll call. I see that all members of the council are present, so we'll move to item 1.05, which is the citizen input. Is there any citizen here tonight who would like to address the Othello City Council? Please raise your hand. I'll recognize you. Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to item 2 is our current business. And I would like to call forward 2.01. On our agenda is an employee recognition for 10 years of service to Tammy Howes. Tammy, would you please come forward? I have a few words to prepare here. I had my staff do some research on you. They just looked on your Facebook page. Yeah. So Tammy has worked for the City of Othello for 10 years. In those years, she has performed various administrative tasks for the Public Works Department. She has worked for several directors and helped transition many new employees through the department during her time. Some of her accomplishments include park structure implementation, cleanup day prep, and completing the consumer confident reports for the city. The role of records clerk is invaluable to the Public Works Department, and over the last 10 years, we're happy to have had Tammy serve, and we thank her for her dedication to the City of Othello, especially the Public Works Department, because they're very appreciative of Tammy's effort. And so tonight, it is with great pleasure that we recognize Tammy for her 10 years of service presented to Tammy Howes in appreciation for dedicated service to the citizens of Othello from 2006 to 2016. Tammy.
Thank you so much.
And with that, I'm going to give Tammy the floor. Okay, so we'll move to item 2.02, public hearing on revenue sources for 2017. Censored. Okay, so I am going to open this public hearing at 6:34 p.m. and Spencer has a presentation for us.
Perfect. That just bought us the 5 seconds that I needed for the computer to catch up. Tonight, I wanted to have a brief conversation with council and talk about the revenues that we're looking at for the new year, for 2017. As you know, we've started the budget prep season as of a couple of weeks ago. Really, it started with the department heads a few months ago in developing our year-end estimates and estimates for next year's budget proposal. An important part of putting our budget together isn't just the expense side, but it's looking at the revenues also. We can only spend the money that we have. and we have to use this money wisely. And so tonight, I wanted to talk about a few of these items individually, and then a couple of the highlights here, and then if you have some questions, we can do some back and forth if you want. I put up just a couple of our funds up here. I don't have some of our reserve funds listed on here. The funds that I've listed up here are the funds that we use when we're, these are really the operating funds here that I'm presenting. The first one here is the general fund. The biggest portion of the revenue in the general fund are the taxes. There are the property taxes in here that are roughly about $1.6 million that we're planning on receiving this year. It's actually $1,582,000, and that's an estimate from the county, from the assessor's office. That number is up about $23,000 from last year, which was, I think the year before, it was about a $20,000 increase. So it's going up a little bit more than it did last year, and that's a very preliminary estimate. Once we get closer to the budget season in November, we'll have an official number from the assessor, and that's the number that I'll bring forward to council again, and you'll validate that that number is what we want to accept from the assessor's office. So that's about $1.5 million of the taxes that we receive into the general fund. The other big portion of that is the sales tax dollars that we receive. That's about $720,000 of this figure here. And you can see over in the street fund, we have the other half a cent sales taxes over there, and with the $720,000 over there. I added just fresh this year, I added a new column for our TBD fund. This is a fund that we will be able to count on for next year. This tax, as you know, started as of October 1st of just 2 days ago. This tax was implemented. So our tax went from 7.7 to 7.9. That extra tax is what's going to be collected over here in the TBD fund. And this fund is a restricted fund. It can only be used for street projects, restricted for that purpose. That was the purpose that the members of the community voted it in place for, and so it's restricted for that purpose. Next year, we anticipate on receiving about $250,000 in that fund, and those monies are monies that we can use in our street fund for our street projects, and we can also use it for matching dollars against grants. Down in our street fund down here, we have $984,000. Most of that, I wrote a note on that, most of that, $760,000 of that is a TIB grant that's coming down the pike for our First Avenue Street from 26th to Soda. Is that right? I believe that's right. That's what I had in my notes. And so we will, if the council wanted, we can use, just as an example, we can use those TBD funds to match that grant. We have a few other things, our water, sewer, solid waste funds. These are our utility tax funds, or our utility funds. And we set those rates sufficient to take care of the needs of that fund individually. We have the tourism funds. We typically receive about $40,000 a year, and then we budget to use those dollars. We also budget to keep a $40,000 reserve in that fund. So you can see this fund, we project that we'll have about $81,000 to use. If we use $41,010 of that, then we'll keep that reserve of 40 to use as the council wants further on into the year, or that's typically how it's been used. We have the real estate excise tax dollars. These dollars can be used for streets, roads, sidewalks, street lighting systems, really a bunch of capital projects. There's an RCW that governs the use of that pot of money, and it lists maybe 12 or 14 different uses. We can also use it for building improvements, city hall, park and rec type buildings. new buildings, rehab of old buildings. Those are the kinds of things we can use the REIT dollars for. And that dollar amount is up a bit from years previous. Last year, we budgeted to receive about $45,000, and we're going to exceed that. So I increased that projection for this new year. Then our last fund, we have our utility tax fund, and these are the taxes on not our utilities, water, sewer, solid waste, but the utilities, natural gas, electric, those other utilities, their cable. And this one is actually down a little bit from years past. This year, we're anticipating receiving about $180,000 less than what we had budgeted to receive. And so for the new year, we want to kind of stay in line with where that dollar figure has been. That's something that Wade and I have been looking at and monitoring with eagle eyes all year long. And we spoke with the Department of Revenue about that also. And they had two main reasons why that was down. One was mild winters, so people were using less. And the other was the cost of natural gas has been going down quite a bit. They shared a little chart with us that shows the natural gas prices for the last, about the last 10 years. And back in 2010 per unit, and I'm not quite sure what the unit, if it's a therm or what the unit was, 2007, we had the cost per unit was $12.38. To 2015, the cost is $9.14. So you can see that's about a quarter of that cost. And so we can see that in the utility tax revenues that we've been receiving for the natural gas portion of this. There are other things other than natural gas in here, but so we've seen that hold true with the revenues that we've been receiving. So when we project our revenues for the new year, we want to be as optimistic as possible, so we can budget the dollars that we're going to be receiving and use those dollars responsibly. But we don't want to over budget and then come in under. Again, those are numbers that we have here are estimates based on a bunch of different resources that we have. We have the Association of Washington Cities that helps us in budgeting some of these figures. And we also have MRSC, which is the Municipal Research and Services Center, which they come out every year with some great budget suggestions, and they interpret some of the legislation that's coming over from Olympia, and they help us get our figures as close as we can to realistic. But again, these are budget figures. They're not going to be exact. They're guesses when you get right down to it. They're educated guesses, but those are the revenues that we're looking at for the new year and the revenues that we're planning our new budget with. With that, if you have any questions about some of these, we can talk now, or we can talk back in my office. If you have some detailed questions, I might need to go back and get some research for you. With that, the time is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Spencer. This time I'd like to open the public hearing for public testimony with regard to these revenue projections for the City of Othello for 2017. Is there anybody here? This is divided into three segments: those who want to speak in support, those who are neutral, and those in opposition to the numbers that we put together. Is there anybody here who would like to speak in support? Is there anyone present who is neutral and would like to speak to that? Is there anyone in opposition? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the public testimony at 6:44 p.m. And now, Council, it's your turn. You guys have a chance to ask Spencer any questions if you have any at the moment. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes. Go ahead, Corey.
You said we're $180,000 short on the utility tax, right?
Yeah.
How much of that $180,000 we already budgeted out?
Last year, we budgeted the majority of the utility tax revenues that we anticipated on receiving. This year, we've had some other, on the revenue side and the expense side, just in our general fund, for example, we've had some unexpected revenues to the tune of, gosh, I'm just thinking about some of the planning and building revenues that we've received in excess, yeah, just slightly over $100,000. We also had some other expenses on the police side, for example. We've been having some turnover with officers, and when we have that, we have budgeted dollars there that are no longer being used fully. Some of them are going to be used for overtime for the officers that we still have. We're thinking that we're fine because of some of those ins and outs, but that's just the process of watching the budget and watching where are we falling. So, but did that kind of answer your question?
I was just wondering if we were going to have to make up for that out of this budget. So, but that pretty much answered it.
We may, it's too early to say for sure.
So when new developments go into Othello, is there any opposition to, putting natural gas in to new developments? Is there a limitation? Is there any reason that the new developments don't have both electricity and natural gas being run to them? I mean, is that a choice? How does that work? Because you collect utility tax on both natural gas and electricity. And if natural gas isn't available for whatever reason, then you're losing opportunity for revenue.
There's no requirement for that, specifically natural gas. But in the case of like 14th Avenue and Columbia Basin Health Authority, Columbia Natural Gas, or I'm sorry, I forget, Cascade. Cascade specifically installed line so that they could service CBHA, so it is provided, but it's literally at the utility company's purview, not necessarily the developer, because the developer could want it, but if it's not in the neighborhood, they don't get that choice necessarily unless the utility company wants to do the installation.
I heard,
for example, over here at my development, I wanted to bring in natural gas, and the cost to bring it in was going to be pretty high. For one, they weren't close to having a line to the existing ground right now. Plus, what they want, if we're going to have, say, 80 lots, and they give you 2 years to get it done. So whatever lots are not done within 2 years, you have to pay $500 a year. So say you only do 20 lots in the first 2 years, so you have to pay $500 per lot for the 50 that are not, that have not been developed or built on, put it that way. So it's a spendy, move. So I decided not to go with gas.
The LDC is making it cost prohibitive to expand the network that's available to the city?
In a sense, yeah, because they want to make sure that within, if they're going to put so much money into that development, that they're going to get their monies back in so many years. They don't want to wait 30 years to get whatever they put into it.
I heard a rumor, and it's just a rumor or hearsay, that Avista's looking at picking up some of Cascade's natural gas's gas infrastructure and putting it in for themselves. They do natural gas already, Avista does. So, that's another way to increase the revenue is to have an alternative or both utilities rather than just one single utility.
If you're going to, we're still paying off the what are we getting off the power? What percentage is that off of the 2%?
Off the electric? This year we had, it's almost half and half. I project about $545,000, you mean in utility taxes that we receive, but $545,000 that we'll receive this year, and on the natural gas side, it'll be just over $400,000.
That's what I was going to say. So if we're going to go to gas, we're going to save, because it's cheaper, we're going to save the customer, so that means they're going to pay less, so that means the city gets less.
Not actually, it's, no. It's 6% of the total bill cost goes to utility tax. And it's, so like, I know from experience at the facility, at the factory, that Avista, the power we buy for kilowatt hours, caps out at just under $7,000 a month. It caps. It's just, that's all that we're required to pay. That's close to a $380,000 a month bill. And we're capped out. But on the gas, it doesn't cap. You pay 6% of it, regardless of what it was. And if you took an analysis of what you're actually making in this revenue account for where it's coming from, it would probably be from the two factories out there. That $1 million, you take those two factories away, it'd probably be under $250,000 a year income.
Yeah, there were four when I spoke with the Department of Revenue just about the natural gas itself. They had four big contributors. I don't remember them off the top of my head, but they were the big ones that you would assume.
But I'm just looking at ways to the usage, like you said, the usage of natural gas has gotten to a point where factories have been forced to, because of cost, it's been cost effective to reduce your overall usage, plus the carbon issues and stuff that are created by that. So they keep, they keep working at chipping away at that and reducing it. And so the availability of it is, there's a greater availability of it. So I was just wondering why we don't develop more with it. It's a great source for homes and stuff like that, for cooking and heating. It's a much more efficient source.
Right now it's a supply issue, and we have a 4-inch line. And in order to accommodate more, we need something like Avista to make an investment in the Othello area and add a 8 to 12-inch line for future industrial and residential growth, commercial growth. So, okay. So let's. Is there anything else, you guys, on this budget? Okay. Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you.
Let's move to item 2.03, Tree City USA. Our Park and Rec Director, Amy Hurlbut, briefed Wade and I last week on this issue, and she's kind of tied it down with this presentation, which we've asked her to be brief. And so we asked her to come and make this presentation to the council. So Amy, take it away.
Okay, so I'll get started so I stay brief. What is Tree City USA? It's a national program to provide the framework for community forestry management in cities downtown across America. So they are a group of people that want to see trees in cities, and not just see trees in cities, but see a sustainable program to support the trees' growth and future planting and things like that. The metaphor to use is a four-legged stool. So there's four important factors that go into this application process, and we'll go through each one of those four now. The first is an ordinance. So the first leg of the stool will pretty much take the lion's share of the work on the very first year that we make the application. Once the ordinance is set, with the exception of any changes or modifications that need to get made, it should stay the same. The ordinance will designate the establishment of a tree board. That can be as many as a large group down to as small as one person who will be deemed the responsible party for making sure that the urban forestry department of your city is being looked after and taken care of. It will also provide clear guidance for planting, maintaining, and removing trees from streets, parks, and other public places. So we have a pretty well-developed ordinance right now that talks a lot about what kinds of trees to plant, how to plant them, where to plant them, and all of those things. We've done a little bit of work to figure out which pieces are missing based off of the template that I got from this organization to work off of. So we're looking fairly well in that department. The tree ordinance provides opportunity to establish policy and back it with the force of the law when necessary, so if there wasn't for an ordinance, then basically it's just because I said so, and that may not be enough backbone in certain instances. The second would be a tree board or staff, which I mentioned in the first leg, so the tree board or staff will be responsible for managing the community's trees. It can be, and I made some notes to myself, I mean, it could be the Parks and Rec Committee, it could be Beautification Committee, it could be three people that aren't on either of those committees that just really want trees in the community. It doesn't have to be any particular type of person, just people who are interested in getting involved. It's probably advisable that some sort of city staff sat on that board just to help guide the discussions and make sure that everybody stays in alignment with what the city is doing. They will also be responsible for planning an Arbor Day celebration, which we'll get into very brief detail on the next. There are a lot of resources that the program can provide, so if you wouldn't consider yourself an urban arborist or a forestry expert or something like that, Tree City USA can provide many different kinds of training. The third is budget reporting. So the minimum spending on urban forestry through the Tree City USA program is $2 per capita. So we will have to plan to show where we've spent that $2 per capita. The list on the bottom tells you which sorts of things you can use towards that. So city employees, that would be some of our maintenance staff in the park blowing leaves, pruning trees, fertilizing, weed eating around the bases, insect control, tree purchases, watering, fertilizing. He said if we need to get really creative at the end, we could use the fees that we assess for the free waste days where we take everybody's garbage and take care of it. The average Tree City spends $9.23 per capita, so I think that when you actually got down to it, you just find that we're spending near that now. This is just a sample budget report, just showing that they do provide you the resources that you need without having to go and reinvent the wheel. The second part of the budgeting report is a work plan. So not only do you need to show where you spent the money, but they want to know how you spent the money. So they'd like a detailed description of exactly what work went into using that $2 per capita. So that's another report that goes along with the annual application. The fourth is a proclamation and celebration of Arbor Day. So we don't have to choose any particular day. It can be any day of our choosing. These are the two, both Washington State and national days that are celebrated to celebrate trees. Sand Hill Crane Festival locally might be a good venue for us to think about collaborating with a local organization. Banners and Blooms, which is the Beautification Committee's fundraiser. If we were to, when we get a new park and we plant 15, 20, 30 trees in the park, that would be our day celebration that year. It doesn't have to be the same every year. It just has to be proclaimed as such by the mayor and celebrated dutifully. This is an example of an Arbor Day proclamation. These are the benefits, or some of the benefits. I won't read them all to you because I know that you guys are capable of reading yourself, so for the sake of time, just a couple of them. It does create awareness in the community. It's good for the environment to have trees. It's aesthetically pleasing. They might look like little baby trees for a while, but come 10 years from now, trees are going to make a really beautiful impact on the community. And I think we can see that when you drive around certain neighborhoods or certain places around town, or if you've been out of town during the fall or during the spring and you've driven down one of those neighborhood roads where the trees are just kind of cascading all over, it's a very pretty sight to see. Trees become part of the posterity in some communities. They use them as ways to remember significant happenings or people in their communities. So this would tie into all of those kinds of activities. Do you have any questions?
So the application for Tree City USA isn't necessarily going to increase our budget now?
So if I were to apply for the 2000, you apply in December 17th as the deadline for application. And if I were to apply this year, then it would give us that designation for 2016. It is an annual application. It isn't a once you're a Tree City, you're a Tree City forever kind of thing. So it's something that you can choose to like it or leave it, I suppose. And this year, I did try to put together an estimate of how much time I thought it would take between now and then, considering we're sort of getting started late in the game. This year will be a little bit more challenging to go back and resurface all of those finances. I mean, they're organized and they're there somewhere, and a lot of it's going to be, you know, sit down and talk to Terry and say, of all of the things in the park that we do, what percentage of that is tree-related, and kind of, you know, estimate some figures. Going into 2017, if we knew that this was going to be a program that we wanted to be a part of, then we would surely start, you know, keeping that information in a file till towards the end of the year when we actually needed it. So I don't think it's impossible to do. This isn't new information for some of you. You've heard this presentation. You've seen these slides. I just shortened it up a little bit. It came up before, and I think there was some intention to become a Tree City. There's some grant designations that Tree City program offers themselves, and I wouldn't necessarily say that that in and of itself is a good enough reason, but it is worthy of putting on other grants to say that you're Tree City, and it does show the sustainability that the city has to take care of trees and to take care of those types of urban forestry.
I think Gina's question may have been, is it going to cost the city money? But it's no cost.
Oh, no, it's free.
The $2 per capita is not going to increase our budget.
No, it's money you're already spending.
Okay.
So what I see is some of the things that you mentioned, like posterity. I think it's pretty well known that our cut down rate far exceeds our planting rate. And when you live in the desert, we just seem to keep cutting down more trees, and that means you just have less shade. You go to older, well-established communities, you know, the Walla Wallas, the Spokane come to mind, and they have large, beautiful trees, shade everywhere. Their fall seasons are very beautiful. You go up Grand Boulevard in Spokane, up to Manitou Park, or, you know, areas of Walla Walla are quite beautiful. We're small enough now that if this council wanted to proceed and go forward with it, you have enough volunteer people in the community that care enough about this issue that they would participate. We could also get some expert tree advice from Tree City USA, and you know, we could over a period of say the next 10 or 15 years go on a tree planting splurge that marks this community for the next 100 to 150 years. Now that's, well, that may seem a little lofty. It's all possible and doable, but it's just a function of what does the council want, and what does this council want the community to look like and be like. I think you guys have all been, have demonstrated over the last a number of years that you look forward into the future. You're a council that likes to make plans and likes to make the community a better place, you know, with the funding of the Dan Deaver Memorial Skate Park, with the planning that we're doing in water and sewer and streets. You know, you guys have demonstrated that. So now, Amy's here just saying, do you guys want to do this? It will take some staff time on her part. How much do you suppose, Amy?
I think I estimated for myself this year, with the amount of digging that we'll have to go into it, we're probably looking at close to 60 or 70 hours of staff time. We've already spent a considerable amount of time doing research on whether or not it was even worth coming this far and talking to you guys about it, honestly. So some of the work has already been completed, but I would say by the time it's all said and done, it will be a bit of an investment.
Well, it'll be an initial investment, though, because once they have the process down, it's going to be the same process every year, and it won't take that long to do.
Right.
In theory, that is correct.
In theory.
So should we start it then for 2017 and not try being, we're going into budget right now and not having Everybody trying to cram this in last minute?
Is the application deadline, is that when all applications go in, or can it be, can you do the application at any point in time during the year?
The portal only opens on September 1st, so the application period is September 1st through the deadline of December 17th. So you can't apply anytime throughout the year, and you're only given the designation in December.
But we also consider that Amy's season is kind of winding down as far as parks and recreation, and so 60, 70 hours might not be
insurmountable.
Yeah, insurmountable at this point in time.
It's also, it's pretty much budget neutral as far as real money. It's just some staff time. Like Amy said, she's already done a lot of it. Footwork, some of the stuff's already been done. And
do you feel like it's insurmountable at this point?
No, I don't. And honestly, the gentleman that I've been working with, his name is Ben, and he came out to Othello. I mean, he made a special trip out here just to come and talk to me about it. And, you know, I mean, not that we would want to sneak by with not doing a great job, but he was like, just get your application in this year. You know, just you don't have to nail down every single detail and remember all of the things that you've done. Just meet the quotas and get it done. And then next year, knowing what you know, you can go in with a much stronger head on your shoulders.
Also, we'd like to put in for some grant money for next year, you know, do some applications. This would help strengthen those grant applications, as Amy said. So the sooner we do it, the better. And like you said, the guy that I met, Sean and I met this guy at a conference here a few months back, obviously knows what he's doing, came to actually made a trip, specifically a fellow, went out with Amy, saw everything, and he's, you know, ready to help us.
You know, the reason I'm laughing is because some of these people are a complete total tree huggers.
Oh, he is.
And so, you know, the tree huggers haven't had a great reputation in, around here, but yes, I am. But their enthusiasm is enough for trees that it makes you think, you know, well, maybe we could do something really good. The only thing I'm going to play the other side of this for a second. I wouldn't want the council to say go ahead and do this if they didn't fully expect that at some point we were going to have to start planting trees. Because if we're going to be a Tree City USA, where's all your trees? That's going to be the question. So that means, well, we have a program to plant trees, and we are implementing that program. Travis?
So I think there's an opportunity for us to cross tie, because the landscaping standards do require trees. And if we are talking about adding irrigation in new developments, the opportunity for us to potentially have them incorporate trees into those plantings in return for potentially a dollar or two off of their irrigation fee. If we set up an irrigation utility, it's an opportunity to encourage people to invest in those trees. From a planning point of view, one of the things that we learn early on is there was a study that was done, and I can't quote where it was from, but the average mature tree is worth about $8,000 to the property owner, and if it's street trees, it can add up to $20,000 to the property that fronts on a tree, on a street with trees. So there is that actually the individual benefit from the planning side that has been shown to exist. And I can dig that study out if you want that justification.
So did we make the decision the other day to proceed with the trees on 14?
I'm going to talk about that. It's not an agenda, but yeah.
So that would go a long way to contributing to the amount of trees we have in the. And doesn't SCS have a program for donating trees? Actually, you could go get trees from the Soil Conservation Service for free if you plant.
They're like seedlings, like small trees?
Yeah.
Yes.
My opinion is it's budget neutral. It's not in Amy's busy season. I say go for it. It sounds like our tree planting plan is going to be built into the ordinances, and we can tie it in with a lot of other things in our planning. I like the idea.
And they could give us guidance in our ordinance as well. Mm-hmm. Well, we have the Mayor Pro Tem is favorably disposed towards this? What about the rest of you, council? I mean, we're not voting on anything, but I'm just looking for a consensus.
I like it, and the one condition that we can't go in and force people to plant trees.
I don't think that's the idea behind it.
Yeah, I just, that would be the only thing that holds me back. Other than that, I'm...
Tree or trees? Because for our development there, you have to have at least one tree in front. That's...
Ordinance.
For the ordinance, homeowner association.
And that's new buildings.
But that's new.
You're not going in, and you're not going to go in and force people who already own lots.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, you might encourage them by telling them, you know, having programs that tell them what the benefits are, but you're not going to force them by any means.
Not force, I don't...
Yeah. And on top of that, it gives us a few extra points on a lot of grants. That's a win right there.
I kind of like the idea that, and tell me if I'm wrong, that the city would be under control to the type of tree. You know, I mean, take for instance out here at the golf course, they just got all them free trees, and it's a jungle and it's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Every time the wind blows, it's cleanup time and pick up trees and stuff like that. The other thing that I'm 100% against is like the beautification going up and down Main Street or 14th or whatever, where concrete's near. I've seen so much concrete torn up by tree roots and stuff like that it's not worth it. And again, we can get a lot of volunteers to plant them trees, but this gentleman over here is going to, he's got to take care of them.
Yep. That was one of the questions that I asked Ben. I
he's got to add to his force to take care of our trees.
Yes,
so what we do over here, we try to get trees that go grow between 20 and 25 foot. Because there's some that will go 35, 40 foot.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the ones you're talking about. The higher they go, the more that their root spreads.
Yes. Yes.
So we try to keep them at least to 25.
Don't we already have some ordinance that has recommendations for types of trees?
Yes.
We have a tree list, but it's not in the ordinance.
Okay.
And then this also has a plan for proximity housing. So a lot of that information has been done many times.
Yep.
So where would we start with the trees if we were to plant trees? Because you guys mentioned 14.
Well,
14.
I would just name it a street, I...
That wouldn't necessarily, that would be left up to the tree board to come to council and ask council if they approved their presentation of where their idea would be. It can be one tree or it can be a whole passel of trees. So, I mean, you know, if we're starting small, then maybe we plant a tree near Dan Deaver's skate park and we call it 2017-16's Winter Arbor Day Celebration. I mean, it can be small or it can be big, and it just depends on the year. I think the flexibility in the Arbor Day festivities is very nice because every year we'll have something different going on, whether it is, you know, landscaping down a city street or adding trees to a new park or replacing older trees or something like that. It can vary.
And to answer you, I was going to talk about this later as part of the 14th Avenue deal, but we met with the Parks Committee last week and talked about trees down 14th, actually. And there's technology out there that keeps the roots from getting into the sidewalks, and it's a tree vault. Well, in this case, we can put PVC type piping, and it forces the roots down away from the thing. So the council committee approved us to go ahead with a plan to put trees down 14th. And we're going to look at the types now. What was that type of tree? Yeah. Autumn blaze or something like that. It doesn't get huge. It's a maple, and it's very pretty in the fall, pretty all year really, except of course winter. But got a plan for doing that, and that'll help us ease the pain of not being able to put street lights in right away. So.
And tree vault technology has come a long ways in the last few years. I know that they used to have the tree vaults, and a lot of those failed, and they were causing problems with sidewalks. But I believe that the tree vault technology has really come a long way, and it's a lot better now.
Yep.
And we need to have the city take care of these because There's nothing more ugly than somebody that takes care of a good tree for a block and a half, and the other people could care less, never get water, and it's the way it looks. Whew.
Yeah.
When are we going to pull them out? They're dead.
On 14th, it'll be within the city right away, so we'll be responsible.
Okay. Good. That's nice.
So do we find out if we can get money for that?
Not yet.
Not yet. Any further questions of Amy?
The initial.
I think the consensus is yes. Is that correct? Yes. Okay.
So the next time you see me will be with an ordinance. Excellent.
And an application?
Sure. Yeah, yes. I'll bring that.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy, for preparing everything. So now we'll move to item 2.04, Pintail LLC annexation discussion. We had a good discussion here last month about this particular project and water outside the city limits. And there's a planning commission meeting, and these are the minutes that were a part of that. And I think we wanted to get a little bit further into that discussion. So, Travis?
Thank you very much. So we went with the Planning Commission last week, and unfortunately, Pintail, through a communication, a miscommunication, Pintail was not at that meeting, so the Planning Commission had a long discussion, but they tabled a recommendation until next month so that they could get a chance to have Pintail come have the conversation with them. But the Pintail property, again, is this one, this dark green one here. And what I did is, after I'd had the conversation with you and I scheduled it for the Planning Commission, I started contacting all of the property owners within this area if they were potentially interested in an annexation. And the green represents property owners who are interested in annexation and submitted a petition to be included in the city. Now, this kind of, I'm sorry, this is brown. I should have picked a different color. This brown and this brown is all owned by a property, a family, and the family was interested in annexation, but only if they could be given R4, residential 4. Under our comprehensive plan, the dividing line is McCann Lane, and on this side is residential. That's where the existing residences are, and everything inside this circle was light industrial. So they were extremely interested in annexation, but only if they got residential instead of industrial. They believe there's a housing market that they would like to help fill, but only with the residential side. They weren't necessarily interested in industrial or light industrial development. So the yellows is this property here. This property and this property is all owned by one owner, and they were essentially against annexation. This property was owned by Mr. Garcia, who also owns this property up here. He was against annexation. He was neutral to begin with, but then he said he's kind of against it. This blue represents properties that would be annexable because they have water service from the city, and we had kind of discussed that ahead of time. So the idea, if you look at this map in terms of the blue is annexable, the green is annexable, the brown is annexable. I also heard from this property owner here who said he is also interested in annexing, but he didn't actually sign a petition, so he was came in after the fact, so he would be interested in annexing. So there's a lot of potential support for annexation. There are, at this point, two owners who are against it, and then there were some others who indicated, and specifically it was these properties here, indicated that they did not want to come into the city. They didn't want to have to spend water on either water or sewer improvements, and so their preference was to remain outside of, so I should have put them as absolute red because they didn't want to have to make those improvements. So the whites I still haven't heard from, and this is the I-502, and they were essentially neutral. they're more concerned about the implications of annexation than they are the services that would come along with it. And so the reason why I'm telling you this is just to give you an update on kind of how the conversation is going. What we have essentially determined, and that is the improvements for Moon Street are the utmost priority at this point. TPG, which is the TART Smart company on the other side of the highway, we have scheduled an appointment between Pintail and TPG to discuss the expansion and the development of their properties and being able to share the cost to make intersection improvements here, and then the water improvements that would be required for both of those developments to proceed. Those are kind of the two drop-dead issues that need to be solved if either one of these is going to occur. And they've kind of both agreed with me separately that they want to participate, so I'm trying to get them together to actually have that conversation. And I'll sit and referee that as well as I can. But so that's occurring Thursday at noon. But that kind of brings you up to date where we are. The implications of these improvements and the water line extension is going to affect whether or not they annex or not, and whether or not they need a second access and a looped water system. The way it works is our city code requires, the water system requires two things, and that is a looped system and the fire flow that goes with it. So if we give them water service, they don't have to loop it. If we annex them, then they have to loop. Also, your other comment was, is if they're going to annex, you would like to see a second access across the railroad. And so they're kind of weighing the issues of if they don't annex and get city water, but they make the improvements and partner with TPG, it lowers their cost, but they don't actually have to do all of the improvements that we're looking for. So we're still wrestling with that question, and hopefully I'll find out a little more where they fall on Thursday afternoon.
So if we don't annex it and they still want water, we can still make them loop it, right?
We could. Yes, we could.
Because that wouldn't be smart of us not to loop it.
Now, that's a really good point. Thank you for pointing that out. Their current proposal is to come out Moon down and back. The problem is water freshness in the pipe, and they need enough pull on that pipe to keep the water fresh. And ideally, what we want is we want the long-term main to go north of the highway. And if they partner with TPG and Pintail does their expansion, they would be able to keep a, it appears they would be able to keep a 12-inch line fresh, and they would be able to provide fire flow. But if we add the looped component, then what happens is it starts to pull water from two directions, and the big 12-inch line, we can't guarantee that we can get it to stay fresh, because we'll probably keep the 8-inch line on the south side of the highway fresh, but not the 12-inch on the north side. So it's almost our thinking at this point where a single line, we lose out on a looped capability, but we keep it fresh and it's sized enough for us to do future expansions on it rather than the 2 8-inches or the 12 and an 8-inch. So we're still trying to wrestle with that. And ultimately it's going to come down to what the engineers do the actual calculations, and right now it's just speculation.
So as of now, we only have the entrance off of 26?
That's correct.
So if there's a fire and there's an accident on the bridge, how do you get in, Gary? So how is that allowed to block that the access across the tracks? And that was the wow.
And on top of that, do we even know if DOT is going to allow an access on off of 26? I mean, I know that there is an entrance there now, but DOT
is being a little squirrely. Back in 2012, when TPG was asking them about doing an expansion, they contacted the city and said, are we interested in helping fix that intersection? And our answer at that time is no. We have no foreseeable need for that. And At this point, when I contacted the Department of Transportation, their kind of comment was, we don't recognize that as a commercial access to the north, so we don't need to talk about that. On the south side, it is what it is, and we don't want any additional growth unless they do improvements. So that was essentially a non-answer. And so I contacted them again, and I said, okay, well, what does it need to look like? And their answer was, oh, well, we don't tell you what it needs to look like. You need to design it and then send it to us, and we'll tell you whether we like it or not.
So as far as, are you saying as far as the improvements on the south side?
On the south side, yeah. They pretended like the northern access doesn't exist. So what their answer essentially tells me is Pintail needs to take a look at their traffic generation and figure out what's safe and send that information to the Department of Transportation. Where TPG needs to get involved is now they have a partner. They need to help pay for some of that traffic study to determine the north-south impacts versus just the south side impacts. So they'll look at it as a holistic question, make a holistic proposal to DOT, and then DOT will determine whether it's adequate or not. So from a planning point of view, that's what I'm going to encourage them to coordinate this Thursday.
So what are the chances of getting access to go across the tracks, being if it's not on Moon, you know, on another location?
That is...
That's going to be 26 is... I mean, for to get more traffic on it, man, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
That is a good question. At this point, I think what we're going to have the discussion once we get the Planning Commission recommendation, and theoretically I'll have it with the Planning Commission, and that is, do we want to pursue a railroad crossing permit at this point, whether they annex or not? Because it would be nice to have that permit and design in our pocket so that when the next person to step forward and have this conversation, we can whip that out of our pocket and say, well, here's our approved permit, and this is the design. If you're going to pay X amount of share of this project, that's when we'll go ahead.
I think that's a great idea. It doesn't commit us to doing anything until such time somebody wants to develop. Also, I don't, you know, they're going to make a recommendation, the Planning Commission, but I don't think that the City Council should act until there's an actual petition in front of you.
Yeah, I think we're wasting our time till we hear back from the DOT as far as trying to get on. Have them people, those two people, send in their recommendation on what they're going to do, and then that's going to get reviewed, you know, and sent saying, no, that's not going to work. And then we're going to look at 6 months here before they get a plan. Mm-hmm. And but I think we waste our time on doing anything until they get that back, because they can't get in or out. I mean, we can give them water and we can give them everything, but
Their access
is mm-hmm. nothing.
They still need to have two access.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If we're going to be, you know, everything's going to be legal and we're going to be growing this area, we need a second means of access.
Absolutely.
We need
it.
Yeah.
It would be Moon Street.
Yeah.
Would be the first initial one.
Yeah,
the range of options here is infinite. From we can give them water, and the county is responsible for everything, from the DOT improvements to the conversations about building permits and design and that kind of stuff. So in that case, we would get the revenue from the water, but we don't have to do any of the administration. On the other hand, we could take it to the other purview, and that is, we want responsibility for all of this. We want it cleaned up, and we're going to make the effort of water extension, sewer extension, transportation improvements, and they're going to pay for it all.
Okay. Any further questions? I think you guys understand the issues in front of you. Okay, thank you. I wanted to call you Spencer.
Travis, thanks.
So I've got a couple of other new items. One of them, Spencer wanted to update us again on the budget meeting, preliminary meeting schedule.
Yes, I just wanted to touch bases on those real fast. We're three meetings into our eight-meeting schedule, and see if we can
pretty. We're on number four, Union Prairies tomorrow. That street and TV meeting will be tomorrow at Gina Doro, Angel Garza, and Mark Schneider. It's tomorrow at noon. This week we have four. We'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So tomorrow's is at noon. Then on Wednesday we'll have the water and sewer, Gina Doro, John Wallace, Mark Schneider, and me. And then on Thursday, solid waste, Gene Baines, Mark Schneider, Corey Everett. That one will be at 6:15 today. And then we have our last two kind of next week on the 11th, the Tuesday, and then this is the meeting that was moved to the Friday. So, I just wanted to have that little reminder. And again, we'll call that day before.
Thank you, Spencer. And then, Wade, you want to talk to the council about the irrigation line on 14th Avenue?
Yeah, the city was drawing, not an architect or engineer. We talked last council meeting about the irrigation line going down 14th, and we're going to stop at Columbia. What we found that sometimes enthusiasm gets in the way of really good analysis, especially when you do it quickly. And today we figured out that we need to actually go down all the way to 26th line because there's going to be a long 26th. There is some irrigation easement that runs both east and west along there. Since we'll stop moving that.
Sorry.
And we'd like to be able to get irrigation down there because we're probably going to acquire this from Pete and probably acquire that from the developers there for a walk path slash park along there. So we need the irrigation to run all the way down there. Also, I talked about the trees. That's one of the main interests right there. We'd like to have trees along there too. So we looked at it and had to do a quick estimate. It's approximately 27,000 more, Terry, to put that in. You guys authorized 10% over the 107,000. That quick math will tell you that's more than that. It'll still come out of the water fund. But in order to proceed, I want a consensus from the council. Of course, we'll bring you a formal change order for the whole thing once we get everything all squared away. But we want a consensus to continue and do this project correctly all the way down. Apologize again for our enthusiasm and lack of planning this thing all the way through. But again, it was done last minute. So, council, yes, no.
Yeah, no, yeah. We got to do it.
Get your act together better next time. Yeah, okay, got it.
We got to start doing things right. If it costs a little bit in the beginning, then we just got to put up with it.
I mentioned the...
It'd be real expensive if we tried to do it later.
Yeah.
We got the people there. We got the pipe there.
Do it. So, okay. And I mentioned that we talked to the council committee about trees along 14th intervals that would be along the proposed streetlights. It would help ease the pain a bit of not funding the streetlights up front for all of that, which as we found it was going to be very expensive. Those trees we put in the city right away in tree vaults to keep the roots from causing damage. I don't have an estimate yet on how much that would cost. One thing, when I was talking to TIB a couple months ago about trying to fund those streetlights, they said, well, we have 5% for landscaping. So I've got what Marcus just asked me, which reminded me, I need to call the TIB folks and see, they may be able to fund those trees. Not sure how much it would be, but I'm still investigating. So with council's consensus, we'll press ahead with a plan for the trees, because if you think about it, you know, when your kids, those who had kids, now 20 years from now, they're going to go, oh yeah, my daddy or mama was on the council to plant those trees, and we'll have a nice interest.
Blame them.
Or what the hell are they thinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you do in the case now if you had utilities on both sides of the road as far as putting trees so the root doesn't mess it up? Because I know we went with the power lines over because we moved the post to the side, and I'm pretty sure we can go there. So what do we do for the future as far as...
Correct if I'm wrong, Terry, but the trees, we're looking at planting, and those vaults help take those roots away from those, because for the utilities to look at, isn't that right, Terry?
Yeah, they're located in that 7.5 feet right away that we have back a walk in the gravel.
We have a water line back there. That irrigation line sits, just directly over what would be this, the old water line right here. It's got 30 inches of cover. And then you've got behind walk, if this was walk here, you'd have a 4-foot vault here, and conduit would set just off of and a foot above and over to the right of this water line, irrigation line. So everything will fit behind walk.
Only behind the walk.
It'll be behind the walk. It won't be, it won't be between the curb and the sidewalk. The sidewalk will be butted up against the curb, and then all the trees will be to the back of the walk in the, in the dirt area back there. There's, I believe there's 7.5 feet of area there to plant trees.
That's all new line, Terry. The irrigation
line. That irrigation line is all purple line, correct. Yeah. It's all new. It's all valved up, and everything's done correctly according to our water. We use the tree list that currently, I believe, the council's approved here years ago, has an actual, requires an actual tree vault if you're within X amount of feet of certain things, curb and gutter, sidewalk, driveway approaches, things like that. It required a 4-foot concrete vault, but concrete is expansive, and over time it cracks. Tree roots get in a crack, and they force it open, and things happen. So we found out it was easier just to take and whack a 4-foot smooth wall, corrugated hand core pipe off, stuff it in the ground, and the roots can't hang up on it. They got to go down, deep water down, so they can't get into the curb and gutter under the sidewalk. It just kind of forces them down.
So you got 4 foot, so that means anything after past 4 foot, then they'll start going
to
the
side. They can go out,
but the utilities above that.
Yes.
So you're good.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, because that AC line that used to be right here has been abandoned, and the only thing that sets there now with 30-inch cover is a 8 and 10-inch irrigation line.
If you're doing a drip irrigation, it's directly over the root system, which forces the roots to go down anyway. So
if you deep
they
water,
they'll spread out to look for water. The water's right on top of them.
You keep them wet, they'll go down. Get it wet. So.
And we're still, the plan is to still put all of the infrastructure in for the light project.
That's what we're looking at now. I'm not sure. I think we can talk to Spencer today. I think we'll be able to find that piece. So we're, every year or so, we can budget for lights as we walk down or up Orton.
And look at the landowners and ask them to participate. The landowners that are going to benefit from it?
Oh, not sure how that would work. Perhaps one of the bigger landowners, yes.
They'll get shade.
No, I'm talking about the lights.
The lights, yes.
Lights.
The lights. If the landowners want the lights now, they can put the money out to get them.
Yeah.
And then they'll be able
to. We'll ask that question.
Did you ever find any information out from Corey's question on Avista?
On as far as
the promise made in the chambers here?
Oh, that's, we're assuming that's in concrete, so to speak. They're supposed to install the lights. They made a promise here on the record they would do that.
Well, Corey thought that they were going to buy lights.
I'm sorry?
He remembered that they were going to buy lights.
$100,000 worth of lights that they promised to buy to get the overhead money.
None of us remember it that way, but that doesn't mean we're correct. We need to check the record.
I'm actually going to give you that form, the meeting that they were hearing. I'm going to read this to the executive.
Yeah. We'll check and see, but I believe it was
installed. Okay. You done that tomorrow, Rebecca?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I know there was a trade-off. We actually asked them point blank for some sort of a trade-off.
And that was for the install of the lights, not purchasing the lights.
But I think there was
we'll
two.
Check this,
I am wrong, but I thought that's what it was.
We'll check the records.
Okay. Thank you, Wade. Item three is committee reports. Is there any committee reports come before the council tonight?
Pretty much talked about them.
Okay, very good. Thank you. It was a productive meeting. I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:39 p.m.